Streaming now at abc.net.au/Canberra. This is Breakfast with Dan Borsha.
Recently, I've been talking a lot about mental health challenges in young people and the lack of services and long waiting lists in Canberra for teenagers at risk. Well, Headspace has been mentioned several times during these discussions. It's a very helpful place for troubled teens and their families. It offers four streams of care: physical and sexual health, mental health, drug and alcohol expertise, and vocational services, specifically for young people who are aged between 12 and 25. Professor Patrick McGorry is a professor of youth mental health at the University of Melbourne and executive director of Oxygen and a director of the board of National Youth Mental Health Foundation, which is known as Headspace. And he's along. Good morning.
Good morning, Dan.
Tell me, what's the support offered by Headspace that's so important for teenagers?
Well, until about 10 years ago, in the National Mental Health Survey, we saw that young people who have the greatest need for early intervention and mental health care, because 26% of them experience a period of mental ill health or even some more severe mental illness in any given year, the highest in the lifespan. The survey showed that they were, you know, only about a quarter of them were getting any kind of help, and that was as low as 13% in young men. So something had to be built at the front end, which was like an enhanced primary care, one-stop-shop sort of model, because traditional primary care was simply not working for them, and that became Headspace, and now it's in over 100 locations around Australia, including Canberra and Queanbeyan.
This week we've been speaking a lot about mental health for young people in schools in particular. A number of principals have said that for them the experience is that one in four children will have challenges that they're dealing with. Anecdotally, though, others are saying that the number is much higher than that, and that there simply aren't the consolidated services and the connections between those services to properly address that. What would you say to that?
Well, I think that's true. I think we know that this is a crucial time that of people who later develop a serious mental illness, half of them will have dropped out during high school years. So that is definitely a key time to provide expert care and support. So linking with Headspace sites is a thing that hasn't really been done properly yet. Headspace, as I wrote in the Medical Journal of Australia a couple of weeks ago, as basically needs to be strengthened. The core ground has reduced in size over the last 10 years. There are several elements of it that need to be strengthened, and we've got to stop commissioning. We've got a PHN network in Australia now. We've got to stop commissioning things around the edges of Headspace and build on the base. Some of these PHNs are just, they've got some additional money for youth mental health, but they're frittering it away on other small programs. We've got to build on this primary care platform and make sure that it reaches out, links with schools, and make sure that all the young people have access to support and care.
So invariably, better resourcing and more contributions from governments across the country is required. What else is needed, though, to improve and grow on the work that Headspace has now been doing quite remarkably in this space?
Yeah, that's a great question. That was another thing we addressed. We've got to put more expertise in the back of Headspace. So Headspace is a frontline primary care model. It probably works really well for about two-thirds of the young people that come in with mild to moderate early problems. But if the problems are more complex, there's really nowhere for those young people to go. The public mental health services, particularly in Victoria and some other states, are threadbare in the youth area. The ACT, actually, in terms of public mental health, isn't too bad. The state government there has actually done a reasonable job. There's still a lot more to do, but but in the main states, in the main populous areas, it's just a wasteland, really. We've seen a retreat of state-funded specialist services. We don't have a youth mental health system. We've got a child and adolescent system and then an adult system in which the young people fall right into a huge gulf. And that has to be a major source of reform going forward. The current health minister and indeed the opposition federally are very supportive of these changes, and we've just got to see investment in this much more seriously. If it was if it was some form of cancer affecting young people or a serious physical illness, we'd see quite a different approach.
My guest here is Professor Pat McGorry. We're speaking about mental health and the future of Headspace. Professor, given that comment you just made, that if it was cancer, we'd see greater funding and spending on this, do you think as a country we're still grappling with the challenges around mental health?
Yeah, I think it looks like we're dealing with it because we've got all these awareness programs and, you know, mindfulness and, you know, having conversations about mental health, but that's as far as it goes. And we haven't seen, you know, a growth in investment in mental health in real terms, you know, at all. And it's bizarre because, you know, we've got all those programs in physical health like cancer, but they translate into incredibly good funding. The contrast is a young colleague of mine, his brother has schizophrenia, had it since the early 20s, and he's had absolutely threadbare care. The young man is quite disabled, has had very little expert input except in acute crises. His sister last year developed a form of blood cancer, and she had absolutely world-class care in the same hospital system where the brother had been treated. And the contrast, it was like an apartheid situation. One type of illness, you get treated one way. The other type of illness, you get the Rolls-Royce type of care that you deserve.
Is this partly due to stigmas that I think many Australians would have expected have been eroded?
Yeah, I think stigma is not a very good concept because, you know, everyone focuses on that and talks about awareness and education, and that obviously
it doesn't cut to the core.
It doesn't cut to the core. I think discrimination is a much more useful concept because that's exactly what's happening to people, 4 million Australians with mental illness and mental ill health. So it's got to be much more serious, and the public have got to demand the quality of care so that we in the services, and also the politicians and bureaucrats, take it more seriously and more professionally. And as I say, I think, you know, health departments, primary health networks have got to take it seriously and commission on the basis of evidence, not on the basis of what they read in the paper last week.
My guest here is Professor Pat McGorry. And Professor, in my reports that I was doing last week, I spoke to a number of school students in high schools, and they were saying part of what they see is driving the increases across the board are social media and the pressures that come from living in a world that doesn't switch off. And obviously that's a very simplistic view of what would be very complex matters. But what do you put down what appears to be an increase to?
That's a great question. Origin is a medical research institute as well as a service, and we're doing a lot of research around those sorts of issues, trying to clarify it. Because, as you say, people are desperately looking for explanations, and they probably many of these things do have a role. But I think if we just look at the change in experience of young people in transition from childhood to adulthood over the last, say, 20, 30 years, the transition starting earlier in late primary school, and it's finishing later, well into the mid-20s. And so it's a long period to be in, a period of instability, uncertainty about your identity and your future. Mm. The financial and social pressures are quite different these days than what they were back in the 60s, with clear pathways to adulthood, which happened much more quickly, with more stability, less drugs and alcohol available. Social media is probably playing an influence too, in good ways as well as bad ways. I think we've got to understand it better by talking to the young people and doing the right kinds of research to clarify it. Even before this you know, this rise in prevalence, though, it was always the period of life when the major mental illnesses appeared, you know, especially the more severe ones like anorexia and schizophrenia, bipolar disorder. They all surface in this emerging adulthood period.
And there is a view by many that this is not just something that governments can fix. It has to be a complete community response. What do you think of that?
I think that's true, but that's also true of any non-communicable disease. And we've been told, you know, because the causes appear to be social, they're not just social, they're also biological and psychological. But because of that, people think, oh, well, that's all we have to do. You see that with suicide prevention, you see. People say, well, we've just got to have a more cohesive community. Well, no, you need expert care when the person's in that zone, in that seriously life-threatening zone. And the expert care, which you would expect for any other life-threatening situation like chest pain or, you know, the onset of cancer, is just in very, very short supply. So it's not an either-or. We have to do, you know, quite a number of things if we're going to reduce the impact of mental illness.
Professor, thank you so very much. It's been wonderful to chat with you this morning.
Thank you so much, Dan. Really enjoyed it too. Thanks.
Professor Pat McGorry there, Professor of Youth Mental Health and a former Australian of the Year there.